You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, we are doing part two of the interview with Dr. Jody Mullen. And if you listened to the last one, you know now why I was so excited about this. And this will be no different. In this episode, part two, we are covering supervision. And so many of you, and that would be capital S-O, so many of you, maybe with four or five O's after it, have reached out and said that one of your greatest needs, one of your greatest desires, and therefore one of your greatest frustrations for the lack thereof is supervisors who are exclusively child-centered. And gosh, I know they are hard to find, but Jody is one of them, and she specializes in child-centered supervision. And that's one of her passions. It's one of the things that she spends a lot of time in her career investing in. And we are all better for it when we have people going out to practice child-centered play therapy that have been supervised by a child-centered supervisor. So we talk about why it's so important, what advice she has, different things about just the supervision process. Really, really helpful. And even if you are not actively in supervision, this is still worth listening to, because if at any point you are in a position where you can supervise other therapists, you need to be exclusively child-centered and you need to know how to do that well. And Jody gives a lot of insight and help regarding those things. So looking forward to hearing your feedback. I'm so excited to share this with you. And Jody is just a lot of fun and brings a lot of joy to this interview. So I hope that you enjoy. Hi, everybody. Dr. Brenna Hicks, welcome to the Play Therapy Podcast. You are getting the benefit of part two of my interview with Jody Mullen. So really excited about that. And oh my gosh, the last one was so helpful and inspiring and uplifting. And I'm so excited to have a little bit more time with her. So I would love to dive into supervision, and my collective people, my coaching people, my listeners, you all reach out to me all the time begging for someone that does child-centered supervision, because your experience has often not been what you had hoped. And I'll leave it diplomatic like that. And I know that that's a huge struggle, because you have to be supervised. You have to go through the process of supervision for either RPT or for licensure. And therefore, you end up sometimes getting supervised by someone that it works in the moment, and then theoretically and clinically, it is not the right fit. And that can be so frustrating and overwhelming and confusing. And I think, quite honestly, it hinders our effective practice. So Jody loves supervision. It's one of her things. So I'm really looking forward to hearing a little bit more from you, Jody. So welcome. Glad to have you again.
Thank you. And it is my thing. So
I know. This is just what you want to talk about. I'm aware. All right. So let's start off. I know we have discussions about this a lot in the collective and in my coaching, when people are saying, I'm just realizing that having a supervisor who I love, or who is really good to me, or, you know, like we have a good relationship and it's been a good experience, but they're not wholly child-centered, or they're not child-centered at all, or they're really pushing me to do some directive techniques. They're really trying to get me to become more eclectic. And there's just this difference of opinion that we can't overcome. So talk us through, Jody, why you think having a child-centered supervisor is so important, and what are the benefits of finding a supervisor that is truly going to align with where you want to be theoretically?
Yeah. So thank you for this question, because it's a great one. There's two parts. So if I don't answer the second part, if you would cycle back and ask me that,
sure,
that would be helpful. Okay. So, I mean, ultimately, without supervision, you're stagnant, right? You're only going to grow so far. So even if there wasn't the requirements, I think that it lines up so well with like a child-centered lived experience, right? In that, like, I want to continue to grow. So that I think is cornerstone to it. I think it becomes massively confusing to supervisees to be supervised by somebody who doesn't have oftentimes, and this is my experience, like the foundational understanding of child-centered play therapy. And so you get like, it's permissive. It's, you don't really do anything. You get all of these sort of myths about the child-centered approach. I think one of the things that I've noticed in my, supervisees and just in, other people that I'm interacting with is, again, how damaging that is, because the pull is, why don't you try this? Why don't you do this? And it isn't connected to who we are. It is not what you do that makes it therapeutic. It's who you are. It's how you're being with that child that makes it therapeutic. So when you have somebody be like, hey, did you try Feelings Jenga? Hey, did you, have you used this particular game? Have you done this? It pulls it apart. And at the cornerstone of what works in all relationships is to feel accepted and like you can be authentic and believed and all of those things. So I think that also has to happen. The caveat to that is in supervision. And so if you have somebody who isn't trusting you as the clinician, isn't trusting the process that you are using with the child, and allowing that to be woven into the supervision, then I think it really muddies the water. And I also will say, and I, again, is a little bit irreverent, is I think a lot of people aren't actually trained in the child-centered approach. So they read about the child-centered approach, but seeing them apply it, that would be an entirely different story. And
yes,
that's where, where some of the miss is. So I can say as a supervisor, well, listen, I know about the child-centered approach, but if I don't do it and I don't buy into the philosophy, how can I supervise somebody who is using that approach? I also cannot supervise somebody who is using an approach that would be foreign to me, not in terms of my intellectual understanding of it, but my practice of it. Can I supervise somebody who is using TF-CBT? 100% no, I can't. But I would be able to say that. And I think a lot of, because child-centered looks easy, that a lot of supervisors will take on supervisees who are using child-centered, but they can't do it.
Right. And okay, so that's so helpful. And I've actually never conceived of what you just said until you just kind of made my brain swirl for a second.
Ooh, how fun.
I think, yeah, I love those moments. So I think that so resonated with me. When you supervise a clinician, they have to feel unconditionally accepted, loved, trusted, valued, heard. And when there is a fracture because of a theoretical orientation, it's impossible to achieve that. And therefore, that flies in the face of everything we believe about the relationship is the heart of everything that we do that allows us to grow.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the whole person-centered, child-centered philosophy. The relationship trumps everything. And so when there's a fracture in the supervisory relationship, even as subtle as, of course I can supervise you, but I really don't trust, believe, understand anything that you're doing, it absolutely becomes a hindrance.
And I think that, and there's that parallel process there. So then how do you use the parallel process of supervision if in supervision you don't feel listened to, heard, accepted, understood, believed, all of those things? So in order to be able to use parallel process as part of the growth experience, there has to be that linkage between supervisor and supervisee. And so it's just not going to work that way. And I know that some of the people who've like wound up doing supervision with me and child, and again, looking for somebody specific to do child-centered, have come from supervisees who say, or supervisors, excuse me, who say, I don't do child-centered, but I do child-led. I'm not even sure what that is.
Where am I?
Right? So, or I'm eclectic, but I start off with child-centered. Well, if you start off with child-centered and then you veer somewhere else, that doesn't make any sense. So please, you know, so that then becomes confusing input to the supervisee. And that's, you know, something we've talked about before, where they are not sure why they're doing what they're doing when they're doing it. And that is why theory is so important, is that you should always know, good clinicians always know why they're doing what they're doing when they're doing it. It's like a thoughtful spontaneity. You have both happening at the same time. And so in supervision, you want to help facilitate that. But if you're, as a supervisor, you know, dipping in to all these different ways of interacting with children therapeutically, then your supervisee can never be able to do that.
Right. And I think it prevents a grounding.
Oh, 100%.
Like your thoughtful spontaneity. That's like, this is such a random aside, but it's relevant. So I had a mom in my lobby a couple of weeks ago, and she's a pharmacist. So she's in a clinical space, but very different field. And she's like, Brenna, your podcast, every time I listen to them, they just give me clinical pearls. And I go, what? And she's like, they're like clinical pearls. She goes, you never heard that? I'm like, she goes, we say that in the pharmacy world all the time. And I'm like, no, but I love it. So like your thoughtful spontaneity, I'm filing that away as a clinical pearl. But I think that that's exactly what a therapist is not able to do. You can't have thoughtful spontaneity and you can't be grounded mm-hmm. when the person that is trying to help you become a grounded, theoretically based clinician is all over the place with what they're suggesting. Therefore, there's no framework, there's no system, there's no process. And then it's, let me just try this out in this moment and see what happens. That leaves everybody unnerved. Right. There's nothing that grounds the process. And that is why theory is so important. I mean, I say that all the time. I could shout it from the rooftops. If we don't understand who we are theoretically as a therapist, we shouldn't be doing our work.
Yeah, it is so vital to this work. And then that's where then you see that parallel process. I love the word that you use there, unnerved. It's like, right, then we feel that then if your supervisor is not grounded and does not have that, everything is unnerved. You're unsettled, the supervision processes, then the supervisee is, and guess where they bring that? Right into the playroom.
Right.
And we're already working. I mean, the one common thing among every child we work with is that they have inconsistency and instability in their life. And then we're bringing more of that into the playroom. And we don't, and I think what happens, and I was lucky enough to be supervised by somebody who was child-centered, is that you keep walking into that playroom, especially if this is new to you, the training is new to you, the experience is new to you, without that stability, without that steadiness, without that center. And, you know, and you get a kid who tests the limits, or a kid who discloses something, and you are completely thrown. But if you have that theoretical approach to come back to, and it is supported and cultivated in supervision, you know what to do.
Right. And early on in the process with my participants, we took exactly what's missing. You can't be competent in your skills and you can't have confidence in what you're doing if you don't have a supervisor that is instilling those things in you with a theoretical grounding, with a foundation, with a system. I mean, all of those are the precursors to walking into a playroom with confidence and competence. And without those things, I mean, and you just kind of painted the picture of the path, but then once we've been unnerved in the playroom and the child is unnerved, then we meet with parents. And that is also an unnerving situation. I mean, it continues on and on and on. And the parent leaves going, what the heck? What is even happening in there? Is this even helpful? Is this even working? And none of that made sense to me. It's a ripple that continues and continues. And it all comes back to the first pebble dropping in the water, which is the supervisory relationship. And that's why it's so important. So I'm so glad that we're talking about this. So a little bit about why you love supervision so much. What is it that is so pulling for you to have supervisees, to do this work? What is it that makes you feel like this is such an important part of your career?
I'm a sucker for a makeover.
Extreme therapist makeover, which you make a show.
Yeah, I mean, I will watch any makeover show regardless. I really am. I think I look at like the different things that I do. So as a clinician, as a clinical supervisor, as a counselor educator, all of those things are based in, I love watching people be able to grow, transform, evolve, all of those kinds of things. And so I think for the supervision one is even more powerful, because if you and I limit our work to just working clinically in direct care with children, we see we can affect this many people. But if we're doing it as supervisors, there's that pebble and that ripple again, right? Mm-hmm. But like, that's done in service, that's done in love, that is done in, you know, from a healing soul. So for me, when I'm working with my supervisees, I feel that this is 30 more children this week that, you know, that are benefiting. I can't see more than, you know, I can't see 30 children this week, but this supervisee can, and this supervisee can, and this supervisee can. And it feels like, it feels big. It feels big. And like, we're affecting children in this way and their families and their communities, and like how real, you know, just really how special, you know, how special that is to be able to have that impact. It's incredible and important.
Oh my gosh, so important. And that's one of the things that I love about my audience. I have people literally all over the world. I get emails from the craziest places on earth. And I'm like, you're listening to my podcast? Oh my God.
How fun.
And I know, it's amazing. And I think that all the time. And I've mentioned that on my podcast so many times. I've talked about it to my participants a lot. And it's usually through a lot of tears of gratitude. But, you know, I always say, I never, ever expected or anticipated the reach and the breadth that I've been able to have by training clinicians. And while I'm not particularly, I mean, I'm an LMHCS, so I can supervise other mental health counselors, but I don't really consider what I do supervision as much as it is like coaching and consulting and things like that. But as I'm training and as I'm coaching, it's exactly the same prospect in my head. Every person that I know goes out and to do their work in their playroom, and they are clinical rock stars, and they know exactly what they're doing, and they're doing great work. That just helps all of those kids, all of those families. Those kids grow up in a completely different, you know, vision of life. And it's the power of the spread, right? And I think that that is such a special thing when we are given the opportunity to know that the reach extends beyond the local work that we're doing in our town, because I'm so thankful and grateful for my center and the work that I'm doing in my community, but that's limited to a certain number of hours and a certain number of kids, right? And so when it extends beyond that, that's the child-centered wave that I talk about all the time.
Yeah,
right?
I love that.
I love it. Okay. So for anyone who is a new child-centered play therapist, either fresh out of school or still getting licensed or really have just kind of fallen into the child-centered world, I'm curious what your advice is for them as far as not only necessarily supervision, but just what do, because you work with so many supervisees that are probably in very new stages of practice. So what are your suggestions, recommendation? What's your advice for anyone that's new to this field? What do you think they need to know?
So I think one of the most important things is how important supervision is that your growth will stagnate. You will stagnate, that your work, direct care will stagnate without supervision. That supervision is, it is the ticket to evolving and cultivating and becoming the best clinician that you possibly can at various times. It doesn't matter if you're new or seasoned. I think is I have no other way to say it is don't be, you know, distracted by the sparkly things. If you are hearing about this really cool intervention or this really different way of doing things that's new and exciting, and you get like these, I don't know, perks that come along with it, it's like, don't fall for it. Because if you don't create that relationship with the child, the children that you are working with, it doesn't matter how beautiful your playroom is. It doesn't matter how much additional training you have. If you can't do that, then you can't do this. And you will be, you'll really be floundering. And I think what I hear most often from my supervisees, who many of them aren't super new to, they're not new to the field and they're of counseling children and they're not new to play therapy, is, and I think you have said this too, is they come back. They're like, wait, I need to find my way back. That's just it, because they got lost. It's like it got cluttered. So don't let yourself, don't let yourself get cluttered. If what you're doing is working in child-centered approach, and it will be, if you're being true to the model, if you are getting supervision, if you are holding yourself accountable, and I'm pretty strict with my supervisees. I will not supervise a person who will not show me their work. And I definitely am of the school of thought, if you show me yours, I'll show you mine. I am not going to not put myself in that vulnerable position. And I'm going to show you sessions that I do or clips from sessions that I do, so that you can see that. But I have had, and I'm part of where this comes from, and I feel like I might be going a little bit on a tangent, but part of where this comes from is that I've had supervisees who told me that they're using a child-centered approach. It's not working. We do, you know, self-report supervision. And then I say, hey, can you do me a favor? Record at least, you know, like a, give me a 10-minute clip of a session with this kid, if we can make it happen ethically, legally, right? Then they do. And I'm like, what, besides the child being in the center of the room, what is child-centered about this? That's why it's not working. And so for me, I need to see, you know, I need to see your work, but that's part of like, that's what you're holding yourself accountable to, you know, too. So I think it's like is not allowing that clutter to creep in and making sure that what you're doing as a child-centered play therapist is really aligned with all the aspects of what that means.
Right. And it's so hard. I think, again, common thread that's woven through stories, right? I think it's so hard to have not had a person walking with you on your child-centered learning journey. In other words, you can take a course, you can take CEs, you can read a book, you can go through a training program. You can have the cognitive knowledge of child-centered play therapy. Yeah. But until someone that does it and is well-trained in it and knowledgeable about it actually walks with you in your learning journey, it never gets you as far as you need to go, because you can have it all in your head and then the practical application in the playroom falls apart you don't know. Well, okay, I know I should reflectively respond, but that just happened. Which of those reflective responses should I use at this moment?
Right.
Okay, I know I need to set a limit, but what does that actually look like? And your brain gets all muddled and then you're like, what am I doing? But the only way that that is overcome is when someone is able to say, okay, let me show you one of my sessions. Let me watch one of yours. Let's role play this. Let's talk through this. It's the one-on-one interaction that I think gets people where they need to be, because I have a lot of people that actually have pretty extensive education in the child-centered model, but they still are floundering in play sessions. And it's because the practical application piece has been missing.
Yeah. And that is part of like when I'm doing training, we're going to do something practical, because you're all sitting there nodding your heads and taking copious notes. But let's put it into play. And that is, I think, especially in child-centered, which looks easy. If I show an untrained eye a child-centered play therapy session, You get a lot of like, so you're just like saying what the kid's saying. You're just,
you're using a lot of wonder. You say, I wonder a lot.
Yeah. It becomes like laughable, like, wow, you can't, you know, you can't see that. So I'm going to have to walk you through this. And also that child, just that 4-year-old was just telling me a story about what it is like to have an incarcerated parent. So how else are you getting to that? I'm just curious, right? So there are these parts of it that without supervision and without somebody understanding that and letting it unfold, right? Without somebody doing that, you're going to just rush the process and then you lose the process. So you lose the child, you lose yourself. So I do think that it is critical actually to have a supervisor who has that theoretical alignment, because without it, everything becomes much more difficult and much less effective. It has to be, right? So, you know, one of the things that I say to my supervisees all the time is I'll say like, okay, so that what you did there, that wasn't child-centered. So let's talk about like what pulled you away and why that's not child-centered. And also recognize when an approach is evidence-based, like child-centered is, and you do anything that is not part of that, it's not evidence-based anymore. And so when you're going like, I wonder why this isn't working, or I wonder why this kid all of a sudden is showing up this way, or the parent is saying like all of a sudden, is because you deviated from what works and you didn't have a good reason to do that.
So, well, they always think they have a good reason, but theoretically there's no good reason.
Well, right. You're going to have to tell me the reason. That's what I hold my supervisees to. If you deviate, I need to know why you did it, when you did it, right? Like what was going on there? I need that thoughtful spontaneity there too. Mm-hmm. What was the thought process? Because you immediately thought that it would be a good idea to get that child to draw a person. Like, why? Right.
So. And so interesting that you said, I want you to tell me why you deviated. I'm going to catch all deviation right here. This is my theory. All deviation is caught under the umbrella or in the net of I second guessed what I know to be true. That's it. So in other words, a parent said, you have to get them to talk about blah, blah, blah. So I second guessed what I know, or it wasn't going as fast as I thought it should. So I second guessed what I know, or the kid wouldn't talk to me. So I felt like I needed to do an icebreaker. I second guessed what I know. If we can get to a point where we stop second guessing,
right,
that is at the heart of adherence to a model, is I will never second guess anything because I believe it so deeply.
Right.
Why would I ever doubt it? Why would I ever not trust it? I believe it. I will live it out even when it doesn't make sense, because when you wait it out, it will inevitably sort itself out.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. So we have to get all of ourselves, right? All of us to a point where we're going, I don't ever have to do something because I'm doubting something. I'm just going to move forward with what I know, what I believe, what I do. And that is enough, because it is evidence-based. And if I adhere, we will get the outcome that we want.
Yeah. And that's why it's not enough to trust the process. You, of course, that's part of it, but you have to trust yourself. And I think when you have when you have a supervisor who is not, I think the word I want to use is married to the approach, right? Married to the child-centered model. When you have a supervisor who is not in that space, then of course you're not going to be in that space. You're going to be second guessing, because part of what's happening during those sessions is, you know, your supervisor is going to be second guessing.
Mm-hmm.
And there we have a parallel process again. And so it just makes it very messy, very confusing. And I 100% know this without knowing it, is that, you know, when we get those supervisees who have been waiting for a child-centered or supervisor, is that they're like, oh, I mean, it is just really like, okay, now they can sort of a bit bathe and bask in that approach and do it with confidence. And, you know, I think that's the other thing that upsets me about supervisors sometimes is that when we are not able to help our supervisees be grounded in a model, when we don't do that, what we really do is strip them of confidence. And so I often see like that as that's my role, is to get your esteem as a play therapist to be so unshakable, not hubris, but like to have it be just your esteem be so unshakable that you can tell me and anyone, even if they're not child-centered, why you're doing what you're doing when you're doing it.
Right. And there's theoretical empirical justification, right? So it brings us all the way back to theory matters.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. So I know all of my listeners are going to want more from you. So I'm curious how they might connect with you. What's the best way to see what you're doing, what work you are, you know, putting out into the world? How can they find out more?
Okay. So an easy way to find out what I'm up to is following me on social media. So I have a Instagram account under Dr. Jody Mully, like a little bit of a nickname there, or Integrative Counseling Services, which is my clinical practice and the practice through which I do trainings and supervisions. We also have a website, and that's just www.integrativecounseling.us. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. And the thing I'm most excited about, and I always feel weird saying the word excited around this, is I do quite a bit of training for play therapists in working with sexually traumatized children. And I pair up with a criminologist, which is a really different twist on this, where my colleague, Dr. Hill, talks about what offenders do. And then we take that and we look through that lens and see it in the playroom. And then we're not missing those red flags. We're not missing the so much of what the children are telling us about that. So I have two of those trainings coming up. He's my colleague is from the UK, so it's a little like it's a bonus to get us together in person. One of those coming up in Brooklyn, and one of those is coming up in Baltimore in the next 2 weeks. So hurry.
Okay. So hurry. Yes. All right. So is there a website they can go to for that, or that's actually on your integrative
website? It's on Integrative's website.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. Well, Jody, what a pleasure. I think we could probably talk for days. And so maybe we'll schedule a round two of this at some point in the future.
I would love
that. It was such an awesome opportunity to chat with you this morning. And I know that my audience is super invested, super passionate, super excited about child-centered. And we feel that from you. And it's so wonderful to have a kindred spirit in that. So thank you so much for being here. And we will continue to collaborate, I'm sure. And I'm really looking forward to more conversations.
Yeah, I'm absolutely looking forward to that too. And I am just so glad that you are doing what you're doing. Because again, your pebble is, it's obvious, Brenna. So I'm so grateful that you're here doing this.
Oh, so I'm grateful you're here too. Thanks so much, Jody. To my audience, love you all. Thanks for being with me. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.